Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Thursday, March 24th. I just want to remind you all that the call-in number for tonight is 914-803-4399. Again, it's 914-803-4399. And before we begin our interview tonight, my sister has some beauty news she wants to share.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Just have a few things really quickly. Just a reminder, IMATS New York is April 9th and 10th in New York City, and you can go to www.imats.net for more information on location and times of the show. Also, at IMATS New York, you're going to have FaceTime with Tate. Tate Steinziak will be a featured speaker at IMATS New York, and Tate was one of the, I guess you would call him, one of the runner-ups of Face Off. But tonight we have the winner, so stay tuned for more with Connor. Face Off will be casting makeup effects artists for its second season on Sunday, April 10th at IMATS New York. So IMATS New York is going to be really busy this year for it to be the first show in New York City. There's going to be a lot going on. There's going to be some great panel discussions with the local 798 union out of New York and just a couple of other really good things. So go out to IMATS.net to check out all that's going to be happening out there. And makeup artist Veronica Lane, she's a past guest of Beauty Talk, will be teaching two makeup classes at Cinema Secrets in L.A. April 16th, she's going to be teaching basic special makeup effects. And May 9th through 11th, she's going to be teaching a three-day fashion and runway class. So for more information on that, you can go to cinemasecrets.com. Or you can check out Veronica's website at veronicalane.com, or you can give her a call directly at 213-700-6926. And that's all for this evening.
Just a quick question. Her first class, was that basic effects, did you say?
Yeah, that was a basic special makeup effects.
And that, what's the date on that again?
That's April 16th. And then May 9th or 11th, she'll be holding the three-day fashion and runway.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much. Welcome to the show, Connor. Glad that you can join us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So you were the winner of Face Off. What did that mean to you?
Oh, it's great. You know, when I went into the competition, I really wanted to show what I was capable of doing on my own, and you know, because I spent so much of my career, you know, working for other people. So I saw that as my chance to, you know, put my own work out there and just let it speak for itself.
Great. Well, I will say, Connor, you were my favorite from the very beginning. I predicted this win, so I'm really happy you pulled it out.
Thanks.
Connor, let's go back a little bit because there's so many questions I want to ask about Face Off, about your career as a special effects makeup artist. Let's go back to the beginning. How long have you been doing makeup, and what inspired you to become a special effects makeup artist?
Well, I've been doing makeup professionally for just over 20 years now. I really got started in high school. I was, as a kid, I was always drawing depictions from films, and, you know, just films that I, you know, that really caught my eye, movies like The Thing or Poltergeist, American Werewolf in London. And I didn't have, you know, I wasn't a makeup artist yet, and hadn't even worked with clay much as a kid. So my, you know, my my medium was, you know, just pencil and paper. And it was in high school that once we got into ceramics class, one of the other students in my classroom brought in a Fangoria magazine. And I was 16 years old, and that's where it finally just struck me that, you know, maybe I could actually make this in three dimensions instead of just drawing it.
I'm trying to figure out, I want the audience to hear, because I know you could just go to school and learn a lot of this stuff, but what must a special effects makeup artist know how to do? I mean, I've noticed, like, on the show, you guys were doing your own sketching, so many different things that I didn't even think about.
Right. Well, I personally believe that one of the most important skills that you need as a special effects makeup artist is sculptural ability. You have to know, you know, human anatomy, animal anatomy, bone structure, muscle structure, you know, skin texture. That's, you know, that's the key to creating a believable prosthetic.
And so did you go to a makeup school to learn special effects?
I did. I went to Joe Blasco Makeup Center in 1989. But before I had even enrolled in makeup school, you know, I was sculpting and learning molds. There wasn't a lot of resources back then, but I did get a hold of the techniques of three-dimensional makeup, and that was my, you know, that was my basis for learning basic, you know, life casting, mold making, sculpting appliances, and so on.
Gotcha. Let me ask you, on the show,
yes,
who was one of your favorite artists or favorite contestants from the show to work with when you guys were in teams, and why?
I would have to say one of my favorite artists was Tate. He had a very original vision. All of his concepts had a huge backstory behind them. Like, he really developed his characters when we were, you know, coming up with ideas, you know, concept art for our characters in the show.
Because of his original vision, and I would agree, he did have a great vision when it came to his characters. Did you find that to be something that was maybe difficult for you, or a little easy for you when it came to just, like, thinking of things off on the spot, coming up with creative ideas on the spot?
Coming up with ideas it wasn't a huge stumbling block for me, but as you could see in the show, towards the end, the judges made it clear to me that they wanted to see a little bit more concept-wise. And I had, you know, gone into this competition thinking, okay, we're being scored on makeup, just our execution as a makeup artist. And it was really so much more than that. So, yeah, by the end, I knew, you know, if I have any chance of winning this thing, I really got to spend a little bit more time developing my concept before I jump into it.
Right. Because I think if you're going to work on, like, film and television, I think that would be something that you would have to, I guess, be really good at or better at, because, you know, that happens on those mediums all the time, where you just sometimes you have to, they'll go in and they'll directly ask for one thing and then they'll change their mind. And you have to kind of be able to think quickly.
Yeah. Which happens all the time, sure.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, Connor, what about your the very first foundation challenge? One where you stopped at, you know, once you all were brought into the workroom, you pretty much had to get started right then and there with the competition with that very first challenge.
In the bar.
Yes, I'm sorry, in the bar, yes.
Yeah. Yes, what, I'm sorry, what's the question?
I was saying, were you shocked that you all were just kind of thrown right into the competition?
You know what, I was shocked, but I shouldn't have been.
Right.
I was just, you know, we were told we're just going to introduce ourselves to the rest of the cast and start chatting as the cameras follow us around, and that's all they prepared us for. So I went in, I grabbed a glass of champagne, and, you know, got to know my my future roommates.
Right. Describe that experience for us. You guys were all in one condo or apartment. What was that like?
It was interesting. There wasn't much in the way of privacy. All the guys shared a big room upstairs, but there was, you know, glass walls and glass doors. You had to get used to being with your roommate. Period.
Mm-hmm. Almost like when you're working on a movie or television show, you have to get used to, you know, the other people in your makeup department and in the hair department. You may not know everyone. So, you know, you kind of have to get used to those different personalities and learn how to work with those personalities.
Yeah, but I'm still glad I like to, I like to get back to my own place at the end of the day and get away from those people. We were deprived of that on the show.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed about the show was that, you know, it was a competition. It was a lot of you, but I often saw you guys helping one another. Like when you're doing your individual work, when there were no teams, everyone's doing their own work. But there were times when someone would go run over and help someone else out. I remember you helping someone out. I remember you saying, "Like, this is no reason for you to, you know, get thrown out of the competition or lose the thrown away or." Because of whatever, I can't remember what it was that they were having problems with, but, like, everybody was running over, pitching in, trying to help, and I thought, you know, unlike some competition reality shows, people don't go help people. You know, it's like they're happy to see someone else struggling and having problems, but that wasn't like that on this show.
No, and I think part of that is because we're all living together.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is that because we all knew that, you know, we have to cohabitate and we have to get along and we have to get through this show because it's not just one challenge. We've got, you know, a month of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point, you're referring specifically to the alien challenge where Tate was not going to get his molds done in time and because they were still full of clay. Joe and I were actually finishing off our mold at that point, and, Frank was the first person to jump in and help him, and Joe and I were busy and diligently trying to get our mold finished, and then there was a point where Tate said, "Can I get a 2-minute warning?" And the guy said, "You have 2 minutes right now." And as soon as I heard that, you know, I looked at Joe and I'm like, "Oh, let's just help him out. Let's get this, you know, get this mold out the door for him." And yeah, you know, Tate's he's obviously very talented. I don't want someone to drop out because of problems with a mold or problems with anything that's kind of out of your control.
Right.
You know, you saw in episode 8, you know, I got a foam run that was absolutely terrible. And,
right.
And that was the worst for me. I'm like, this is the final challenge, and I've got one of my worst pieces to deal with ever. It just makes life miserable.
Right. So speaking of that, you know, what do you do, or what's the right thing to do when you get in situations where, you know, time is working against you and you're running out of time, but you know you have to have a certain quality of work and, you know, and it's needed right away. Like, how do you react to that? Like, it seemed to me that most people on the show, you know, freaked out at first, or at least maybe that's how they edited so that that's what we saw. But in real life, what's the best way to deal with that?
I think it's situational. There's plenty of times where, you know, we're under the gun, and, you know, I'm thinking I'm not going to make the set on time, I'm not going to get this finished in time. And it's been a long time since I actually remember, like, holding up the camera. You know,
right.
You figure out a way, or sometimes you do need an extra 5 minutes, but it always seems to work out in the end. But you have to be,
yeah.
You just have to be prepared. You have to be prepared for anything.
Yeah. And you also need to have, you know, you also need to be able to just take a deep breath and then just kind of, you know, get refocused.
Not panic.
Right, not panic.
Yeah, not panicking is always good.
Right, because you're sure to mess something up when you panic. So let's go back to everybody's favorite, in a way, Frank. Let's talk about Frank a little bit. What was the deal with Frank?
Oh, well, what can I say other than Frank is Frank?
Right.
I got along with Frank just fine. Mm-hmm. Frank has a lot of experience. He's very, very knowledgeable. In the end, he just couldn't get on board with the idea of letting other people control his life while under the stress of competition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not easy having production assistants half your age telling you what you can and can't do all the time. It can really wear on your nerves a little bit.
Right.
And, you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the reality show format is, you know, it's very controlled. You're essentially allowing these people to, you know, control, you know, your life for a certain amount of time to get, you know, everything we'd all signed up for, which is, you know, to be in a competition, but also be on a TV show.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because just looking at the show, you would automatically think, you know, oh, this guy is horrible, you know, he's not a team player or whatever, when that may not necessarily be the case. So I'm glad you mentioned, you know, you threw in the whole, you know, production side of the show so that people can really understand what really goes on behind the scenes.
Right. Yeah, I think in the end it wasn't for Frank. And, you know, Frank knows that he has a short fuse. He knows that his attitude has hurt him in the past, but he knows what he's doing, and, you know, which is precisely why I chose him as my teammate in the last challenge. I knew
mm-hmm.
that he'd go unsupervised. I could ask him to do something and he would just do it.
Right. So tell me, how did you feel, or how, you know, what were the opinions of the other contestants during the body painting challenge when Frank had his model, like, I guess turning away, facing, like, the backdrop, and he didn't really, like, speak to him or talk to him or anything throughout the whole process? Like, how did everybody react to that?
Well, I think he had a little more communication with his model than what was shown on TV. He was definitely, you know, upset and not talking to him in the beginning, but eventually they did, you know, open up to each other a little bit, and, you know, Frank kind of got into the groove and started doing something. So, you know, again, it wasn't all bad.
Right. And so I guess my last question about Frank would be, there were a couple of challenges where he didn't really utilize all of the time that was given. Like, why do you think, you know, that was the case? Like, did he think that the finished, you know, product was great and he didn't need the extra time? Like, what was the thought behind that, if you have any idea?
I can only give you, you know, my opinion. I really don't know what he was thinking, other than the fact that I know if you ever watched the audition videos, his
uh-huh.
goal was throw everyone else off their game. His
gotcha.
Goal was to upset other contestants. So this is no secret. So
right.
I think that was definitely part of it. That was part of his tactic, to get under people's skin. Other than that, I'm not sure. I don't know. You know, he obviously, you know, he had to work very hard to get on the show in the first place. So it's not like it was just something that he could, you know, take or leave. So I'm,
mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure what, you know, what drove him to to make those displays. It would make everyone know that he was sitting back and reading a book.
Right. So what
So what was that process like, getting onto the show, that whole audition process?
There was three interviews total before the show started. There was an open casting call, which, you know, mine was in Florida, in Orlando. So it was a no-brainer for me. And as soon as I heard about it, I thought, great, what an awesome idea. So I just showed up the first time, and I was called back for a follow-up interview. And then there was semifinals, which was, you know, we all had to go to L.A. and stay in a hotel for a few days, do another makeup test, another series of interviews. And we weren't informed, you know, whether or not we were getting on the show until literally, I think, 2 days before I had to fly back out to Los Angeles.
Right. And so when you were informed, did you have to pack up your own kit, or did you just use the kits that were given to you?
On the show?
Yes.
On the show, everything was provided, aside from sculpting tools. We were allowed to bring our sculpting tools, and that's it.
Okay.
That's all we were allowed.
Wow.
The shop was pretty nicely stocked.
Yeah. And so now your kit is probably pretty nicely stocked since you're the winner with a year's worth of makeup from Alcom.
Yeah, I haven't actually received my prizes yet, but yes, I'm really looking forward to that.
Now, earlier I asked you who was your favorite artist to work with on the team and why. What about one of your least favorite, if you don't mind sharing that?
In regards to the team challenges?
Yeah.
Well, there's no secret that Tom and I kind of butted heads in the first challenge. And it was unfortunate because both of us really had the same goal in mind, which is just produce a good makeup. And, you know, I had asked Tom to trust me and trust my judgment. And he did. In his defense, he completely did. And the problem was just that we have completely different ways of doing things. We had different concepts. We really had to get along, even though we weren't agreeing on anything at all. So we got through it, and we got through some big problems that we were having in regard to, you know, which direction to go in and so on. And, well, we came out winners. So in the end, it worked out. Even though we couldn't agree, we essentially agreed to disagree and still knock out a good makeup.
Right, right. Have you ever had any experiences like that on a job where, you know, you and someone else that you were working with couldn't agree, but it wasn't easily worked out like you and Tom situation?
Well, and that's the big difference on a film set. You usually know, you know, who you can argue with and who you can't.
Right.
So, you know, when I'm working for somebody else, it's, you know, their decision is final. There really is no arguing, even if I don't agree with it. So in that regard, it's just different. I don't really have, I can't recall any time on a film set where I've just been butting heads with the person I'm supposed to be doing a makeup with.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, because there were a couple of challenges where, you know, you had to do tattoos, there was some body painting. You know, some people don't look at that necessarily as special effects makeup.
Right.
How important is it for a special effects makeup artist to know how to body paint, to know how to do tattoo work, you know, and some smaller things like, or even beauty artists to know how to do bruises and, you know, things that, like, you know, you really get into big stuff. But, you know, but then you still have your bruises and your black eyes and your scars and body painting. How important is that for?
You know, I personally think that diversity is the key to longevity in this business.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of effects artists, especially a lot of the L.A.-based artists, who are specialists. They work at the big shops and they specialize in one or two things. However, if I had gone that route with my career, I wouldn't have been able to actually leave LA and continue to make a living. The fact
right.
that, you know, I can sculpt, paint, mold, apply prosthetics, airbrush, and so on is the secret to my success. Really.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you. You had Neil, and you had Glenn, and you had Patrick all as judges.
Yes.
And then you had, you know, a guest judge who was somebody very phenomenal. What was it like to stand in front of these artists who have won Academy Awards, been nominated for Academy Awards, and who just have all of this great body of work that they've done in their career? What was it like standing in front of them, challenge after challenge after challenge?
Good question. I've certainly worked with my share of makeup artists over the years, some of them Academy Award winners and so on. But, of course, this is different. You're being, you know, it's one thing to work beside them, it's another to be standing in front of them being judged.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little intimidating, especially in the beginning. I knew Patrick from years and years ago when he was, you know, moving up the food chain as a creature designer. I've worked with him on a couple small projects. And then I'd never worked with V, I'd never worked with Glenn, but I had worked with a couple of the guest judges. I'd worked with Greg Nicotero on Walking Dead, and I'd worked with Sean Cunningham on a film called Trapped Ashes that we shot in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't, you know, they weren't strangers to me, but it was a little intimidating being in front of them and asking them to critique my work.
Right. You know what I found very funny was it seemed like almost every show, Glenn would say something to whoever was before him in front of him that, you know, he was judging. He would say something, and whoever it was, I think he got you one time, like you guys would freeze. And then after he finished his thought or whatever, and he's like, I love it, it's great, or whatever, and then everybody was just, you know, it was like a sigh of relief. And it seemed like he did that all the time, and I'm like, we haven't called on him yet, because I guess when you're standing in front of them, it's like you said, it's very intimidating. You don't know which way it's going to go. You know, you're already second-guessing some of your work or whatever, and then they get up there and say, well, you know, I stress the importance of you not doing such and such, but you did it anyway. You know, what were you thinking or whatever? And then he was like, well, it worked, and I love it. You know, but meanwhile, you're freezing because you're thinking... You know, just thinking like, oh, he's going to hate it, I'm going to be kicked off this week, you know, that kind of stuff. What was that like?
It plays on your nerves. It plays on your insecurities. And there was a few times where, you know, they kind of reversed themselves on certain things. Like, you know, Megan had gotten in trouble for designing a prosthetic with a fixed mouthpiece in one challenge, and then Tate went ahead and did it two challenges later, and I thought he was in trouble. I thought for certain, I was asking myself, why is he signing himself up for that kind of criticism? And they ended up loving it. So, and that, again, when you're in that, you're in that challenge, and you're asking yourself, what do the judges want to see? What do they want to see out of me? I need to let them know that I'm listening, that I'm listening to their critique, and I'm trying to learn from it. And it's still just impossible sometimes.
Right. Let's talk about the girls a little bit. We had Jessica that was voted off first, and then Megan, and then Joe, and then Sam. Out of the four, who was the strongest, do you think?
I would have to say Sam was probably the strongest artist out of the group of them. even though she doesn't have a lot of experience in makeup effects, she's just a good artist. She has a good eye when it comes to illustration and with sculpture. She had the eye. She had good forms every time.
Now, from the very beginning when I saw her work, I would not have thought that she didn't have a lot of experience. The one person to me that I thought probably had less experience, because I kept seeing more of her beauty work than her effects work, was Megan.
Uh-huh.
So I saw more of her, like I said, more of her beauty than effects. So to me, of course, I thought definitely Sam was the strongest of all the girls. But like I said, I would have never thought she didn't have that much experience. She totally fooled me on that one.
Yeah, and she has done a few films.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, she her background is, kind of like mine. She had a background in art regardless of how much time she'd actually spent doing makeup effects. So
right.
she did come in pretty strong in that regard. Every time I saw her sculptures, regardless of, regardless of the final scores and so on through each challenge, sculpturally she was always strong.
Right.
And I know as far as Megan's abilities, she's definitely very strong with her beauty makeup, which, as I pointed out in the gender swap challenge, was my motivation for picking her as my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I knew I was going to need help on, was making a convincing beauty makeup on a very masculine African-American gentleman. So in that regard, we played to our strengths and we were successful.
Yeah, she does really great beauty.
Yeah.
What about the challenge when you had to disguise yourself? And the judges were saying that it looked a lot like you. I was totally shocked. I didn't think that they would. I thought that they were going to say Megan, because it almost seems like it was hard for her to disguise herself. And I didn't think they were going to say that to you. How difficult was that challenge for you?
How hard was it?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find it all that hard. I chose to go the minimalist route with this challenge for good reason. We all know that prosthetics play to the camera a lot differently than they do to the naked eye. And
mm-hmm.
my sister has, she has some experience with prosthetics just through me. So
okay.
I knew that to pull off a convincing disguise makeup, I really thought that subtle was the way to go. And I used gelatin prosthetics again, color matched it to my skin, tried to make pieces that would require as little extrinsic coloring as possible. And I thought I had a really successful makeup.
Mm-hmm. I thought you did.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in that episode.
Yeah, me
I thought too. I deserved a little more credit.
Yeah, I think I agree with that one. I thought you deserved a little more credit also. I was kind of shocked at that.
Well, I can't win them all.
Nope, you really can't. But speaking of winning them all, I thought you were going to win all the challenges early on in the show. I thought if Connor wins another challenge, it's fixed.
Honestly, I was kind of shocked when I won the third challenge.
Yeah.
Again, just didn't know what to think. Didn't know what the judges were going to say, and there was actually a lot of problems in that challenge that you don't really see so much in the episode.
Yeah. Well, like you said earlier, you have over 20 years of experience. Someone with over 20 years of experience, I would think, would know how to deal with situations that may pop up. Something's not working right. Because you've been doing this for over 20 years, you may know how to respond to certain things. And it wouldn't have surprised me if you did win most of the challenges or all of the challenges.
Because I think you were the only one there with that much experience, many years of experience.
Yes, I was the old man of the group. Dealing with unexpected problems was certainly part of it. It happened in real life, and it certainly happens when you have 2 days to produce your characters.
Right. How difficult was that to do that in 2 days? And let me ask you this, when you say 2 days, how much time in each day was given?
Actually, the challenges didn't give us a whole lot of time. It was the way it was formatted. Our first day would be 5 hours, and then our second day would be 9 hours, and then application day is 4 hours in the lab, followed by an hour of touch-ups on set. So there was certainly, in these challenges, there was plenty of us, and anyone who works in film knows, we're used to working 12, 14 hours a day. We would have gladly taken that in order to make product better. But this is how they set it up. This is what they wanted. And we had to get as much done as we could in that first 14 hours, which wasn't always enough either. There was certainly a few times where I was still pouring prosthetic-grade silicone into molds the morning of the application.
Wow.
Yeah, happened a few times.
I mean, I know you have 20 years of experience. I know that, you've done this a lot of times. But I could just imagine that, it's a competition. Some things you didn't expect. Maybe some things did surprise you some. But it seems like with these shows and, the other makeup reality show, Blush, it just seems like there was a lot of times I'm looking at these shows and, Blush, they did more beauty, and here it's special effects. But, if you're a special effects artist and you have all this experience, it seems like there would be nothing that could, trip you up or nothing that, even though you don't expect it, you would be too shocked or surprised over. But it seems like to me this would be a very hard competition just to come in and have to, do this work within limited times, have to kind of think out of the box sometimes and, be very creative, even though you know how to do the work. But it just seems like someone coming, gathering us together saying, this is what your challenge is. These are your models. This is what you have to do. To me, it would just be kind of stressful. I don't know how long it took to film one episode, but it just seemed like it would be just very stressful and then turn around and do it again.
That's the part that kind of wears on you is that. Even though each challenge, we shoot 2 episodes a week, and it didn't even matter. Like, we get out of judging, and it's on to the next challenge. So that feeling of nervous anticipation is always there. It never goes away for a solid month. You've got butterflies in your stomach, and you're just trying to cope and keep your head in the game.
Right. Wow.
It was a little tough, especially towards the end. By the time we were going out on stage for finals, I just wanted to go home. I was so wiped out that I just wanted to get back in my own bed again.
So here's a question that everyone is really wondering about. What was your relationship with Megan?
Megan and I are friends. We still talk now. I know the drama was played up a little bit in the show. And, if you look at it, a lot of the drama was really what other people were saying.
Right.
Not something anything that Megan and I were actually doing.
Because
we got along great. What you see in the shop, you see two people getting along. And when we were partners in that one challenge, we worked together and we did what we had to do and we got along great.
Well, what I couldn't understand is why that was such a big deal for other people, especially Joe. I didn't understand why that was such a big deal when, to me, I would spend more time focusing on my own work and, you know, what I was doing than to really kind of worry about how two other people are getting along.
Right. It's a valid question. I recently talked to Joe for the first time since the show, and, you know, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, there's no animosity and so on. A lot of us are going to the, you know, some upcoming conventions and so on, and I want it to be I want to have a good time. I want to be able to get along with everyone. Obviously, I have nothing to be upset about. And, but to be honest, I mean, to address the question, I honestly don't know what the problem was between Joe and Megan. You would have to ask Joe. that's not meant with any level of animosity. I truly don't know what the problem
was.
That wouldn't be a bad idea to ask Joe.
But I understand that Megan and Joe have buried the hatchet since the show.
Oh, well, great. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, because it was kind of, you know, unnecessary. Like, they should just join forces instead of working against each other.
Well, I will say, like I said, sometimes I feel like a lot of things are played up for TV. But like I said, whatever was going on, Joe would know. Megan probably didn't even really know or understand why. But one of the things I liked about Megan, when Joe was leaving and she said all the stuff that she said to Megan, Megan just said, "I forgive you, Joe." I thought it was great to just, you know, like, I'm pretty sure at that point she didn't want to hear it. She probably didn't really understand why this girl felt the way that she did. But I just thought, for television's sake, I thought that was great for her to just say, "I forgive you," and then, you know, just move on.
Yeah, and when you're in a situation where, you know, we're not sure exactly what the problem was to begin with, and then come off of judging in that episode, and, you know, the other contestants, when they're doing elimination, we don't get to hear the consultation. We don't get to know who got eliminated until they come out from that curtain. So I have no doubt in my mind at the time that Joe probably thought Megan torpedoed her.
Yeah.
She did get eliminated in that episode. And, you know, if you look at what was going on, I'm sure, I have no doubt that she expected Megan to vote her out, and she didn't.
Yeah, she didn't. Exactly. You're so right. Absolutely. So let me ask you, I'm just going to name a couple of the other contestants and just let me know what you thought about, you know, some of their work, at least from what you could see, because my thing is, I don't know how anybody has time to, you know, really pay attention to anybody else until the final product is before you. But let me just find out what you thought about some of their work. And I know we talked about Tate earlier, and you talked about his original vision, and you spoke about Tom and Sam. What about Jessica? I know she wasn't there long, but what do you think about some of her work?
I honestly couldn't give you an honest opinion on Jessica because we didn't get a chance to see her body of work. In that first challenge, I know I voted her out, and I voted her based on what I saw. I didn't know any of the other contestants at the time. So, you know, the decision to vote out Jessica was completely unbiased and based solely upon the fact that I thought she created an unsuccessful. That doesn't necessarily mean she's not a great makeup artist. In fact, I've heard that if she would have made it to the body paint challenge, she would have killed us.
Oh, wow.
She is a really good body painter. So she didn't get a chance to shine in that regard. And And if she's listening, Jessica, I'm sorry. I really,
right.
You know, I felt so, we didn't even know going into the first challenge, we didn't know that we were going to have any hand in, you know, in consulting with the judges over elimination. That was the shortest lived victory in history when I was given the win and then was told I had to talk to the judges about elimination. It was terrible.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. Who wants to do that? It's like, you know,
yeah.
you're just thankful that you're still there. Now I have to go help vote somebody else off.
Yeah, it's not a good feeling.
No, I can imagine. What about Gage?
Gage is hilarious. I love Gage. he is. He's so much fun. He's such a high energy person. Him and Marcel. It was like having live improv comedy in the lab. Gage is a very creative person. He's very artistic. I don't know like really how much experience he has with prosthetics per se, but again conceptually, he's very creative. His Hansel and Gretel was really great. It was. The way he fused the industrial theme to that fairy tale, I thought was beautiful, and at the same time. But yeah, he's got some real talent.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree. Tom, his work, and from what I understand from the show, I believe him and Gage worked together in the past.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about this from Gage. When Gage was starting out in the business, he worked for Tom on a few films. I really don't know the duration of those shows. I don't know what films they were. I'm guessing they were kind of, you know, low-budget horror, independent horror films or something like that. So I didn't really get to hear too much about the dynamic between the two. But they got along fine on the show. And I know... You know, I'm not gonna backpedal. I know there's an episode in the show where I said that I felt like Tom's work was more like haunted house quality type work. And yeah, I did say that. I kind of regret saying it because I don't want to. You know, Tom and I have also buried the hatchet since the show, and I don't want to say anything bad about anybody. Tom has created a niche for himself. He seems to work steady. He does a lot of these independent films, and you know, good for him.
Right.
You know, I certainly have no animosity towards anyone on the cast.
Joe, what about her work?
I'm sorry, who?
Joe.
Oh, Joe. Again, I didn't really get to see. I don't feel like I got to see what she was capable of doing. We were teamed up in the Alien Challenge, and she did essentially defer to my experience as far as how we were going to proceed with the alien prosthetic and so on. And you know, she was helpful, but I don't know. I know that she's kind of fresh out of school and doesn't have any film credits. So I still don't know where her strengths really are, but she seemed to be a good painter.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the judges really liked her painting in that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, did you feel like it was necessary, like when you worked as a team, did you feel like it was necessary for you to kind of, once you guys got the instructions, kind of be the one to take charge and say, okay, this is what we're going to do or how we're going to do it?
Well, the only time that ever really became an issue was in the first challenge, again, with, you know, just Tom and I not agreeing so much on procedure.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you know, Joe, again, she knew I had the experience and she trusted that. Same thing with Megan. When we did the gender swap challenge, we really knew from the get-go, you know, who was going to be responsible for what. And, you know, we both had a hand in sculpting and making the molds and all that. But when it came to casting prosthetics, again, she kind of deferred to my knowledge of silicone prosthetics and gelatin and so on. So it was situational, but there was never a meltdown between me and one of my, you know, teammates. In fact, right. I think the only real meltdown I witnessed on the show was the one between Anthony and Frank.
And yeah, what about Anthony? We hadn't really spoken about him tonight. What did you think about Anthony's work?
Well, Anthony, again, I didn't know Anthony before the show, but I knew nothing of his work. When we went into the show, we weren't allowed to bring, you know, we didn't have any media. We couldn't bring our computers or cameras or anything, so I didn't know how good any of these people were. Anthony really proved himself in the body paint challenge. He did a great job. It was, you know, conceptually was great. His execution was great. So he obviously has some skill. As you know, he was ultimately eliminated in the zombie challenge, which I thought was unfortunate. I understood the judge's decision, and I think Anthony has real talent, and I think, you know, maybe it just got away from him. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it in that challenge. It's hard to say.
Right. Who did you feel like was your greatest competition?
In the beginning, I thought my greatest competition was going to be Frank. I wasn't particularly intimidated by anything I had seen in the beginning, but I just knew from talking to him that if there's anyone in this competition who's really experienced, aside from myself, I knew it was Frank.
Right.
And, of course, Frank was eliminated by the third challenge. At that point, it was really Tate. Tate was the only person who I actually felt any level of intimidation from, because I knew that creatively, he was always coming up with these crazy ideas, and the judges were loving it.
Yeah, he's very good. And actually, when it came down to the final four, I really felt like I knew that it would be Connor, I knew that it would be Tate, and I knew that Gage would be in it. I just knew that those three, just throughout the all the different episodes, I felt like the three of you were all consistent, you know, producing good work, you know,
right.
No matter what your style, whatever your style was or whatever, your level of creativity or whatever, I felt like the three of you would be in the finals. And I didn't realize that they would have, I didn't realize that they would have like four people, as finalists. And, you know,
I was surprised about that too.
Yeah, that was kind of different. I thought maybe like three people or something like that, and then one's eliminated, and then you have the final two or something like that. But I didn't realize they were going to do it that way. But the three of you were definitely three people that, you know, once after about the third or fourth show and people were being eliminated, then I could kind of see, you know, okay, these are the people that's left. I could pick, you know, Gage, Connor, and Tate for sure to be the three finalists. And then, you know, I was happy to see Sam in the bunch because, just in general, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't see too many female special effects artists out there.
No, it is definitely a male-dominated business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was glad to see, you know, a woman in the final four. That was good to see. And I was happy that you won. I thought it would come down between you and Tate, and I was pulling for Connor to win. But you know, if you didn't win, I was going to be a little shocked, but I would have been happy, you know, if Tate won. That would have been okay with me. Not like I could do anything about it, but that would have been okay with me. But I would have kind of been shocked. I just felt like from the very beginning, I thought you were the winner.
Well, thank
you.
I got to say that there really was no point in the competition where I had that level of confidence where I thought, oh, I've got this. you know.
Okay.
And by the end, when we finally went out on stage for the last time, and it took a long time, where there were some technical difficulties and all that, we were just losing our minds waiting for them to render a decision. The whole time I was out there, I was mentally preparing myself by saying, just be prepared to give Tate a hug and congratulate him.
Right.
You know, because I don't know what the judges are going to say. I don't pretend, you know, to know that what they're going to like and dislike. And overconfidence just doesn't get you anywhere.
Right. Right, because, I mean, even though you've had 20 years of experience, there's always something for you to learn, something new. I'm sure there's areas you still want to work on and improve at. So with that being said, what's next for you? Now that you've won this competition, you know, you've been doing this for over 20 years. I'm sure you want to continue. What's next for you?
That is the question of the month. I've been trying to decide my next move. I'm still in Orlando as we speak, but I don't have roots here. I've kind of been living and working on the road for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what's next. I have been talking to V. Neil. We have talked about doing IMATS LA. And
Please do that.
I'm all over it.
That's one of our favorite shows.
Right. I'm also going to Monsterpalooza next month. And I've never been to one, and so I'm just doing it because, you know, with all the popularity from Face Off and so on, I just wanted to go back out there and talk to people and, you know, see what the buzz is, see if it's if I can turn it into, you know, an actual job.
Well, yeah, right. Exactly. I definitely say, you know, any opportunity you get to get out there, I would definitely do it. I mean, considering that you are the winner, you know, make it work for you, for sure.
Yeah. So, but and that's the thing, though. I knew going into this, I didn't expect that there's effect shops and producers out there who are just sitting by their TV sets waiting to decide who the next effects artist they're going to hire is. Because, you know, a lot of established filmmakers have their people. So
right.
At this point, I think it really is, a lot of it is what, you know, what I make of it.
Right.
The kind of pseudo-celebrity status is one thing. I mean, that's funny and it's cool and all to be, you know, popular for whatever reason, I suppose. But, you know, from the business end of it, I really want to see if, you know, maybe there are people out there who just didn't know I existed, who maybe have taken a liking to my work, and that's what I need to try and find out.
Exactly. Well, we have a caller. We have like a minute left, but I'm going to bring the caller in.
Okay.
And get them on really quick. Hello?
Hello, ladies. This is JK.
Hi, JK.
Hi, JK.
How are you?
Very
good.
Good, thanks.
Hello?
You have a question?
Yes, my question was, I know I came in late, but I was trying to find out where Connor had been trained and if when he began to be hired on Cruise, because you will be, your work was fabulous on the show,
are you
going to promote diversity? Because there are very few African-Americans that do blood and gore. There are a few of us who dabble and do some portions of it, but I want to see more of us, male and female, getting into that work, and it's going to take somebody like you helping bring us in. So are you going to be more diverse, and where did you get your training?
Okay, well, I'll address the training first. Back in 1989, I went to the Joe Blasco Makeup Center in Los Angeles, and that was the beginning. I mean, that's really the bare bones beginning of it, because where you take it and what direction you go in is entirely up to you. I chose prosthetics and creature effects and so on, so that's the avenue I pursued. In regard to diversity in the workplace, obviously, I mean, I'm all for it. One of my favorite sculptor designers of all time is an African-American gentleman by the name of Jordu Shell. He's insanely talented. He does show up at the IMAT shows, and as far as I'm concerned, one of the most inspirational people in the business to me personally. And you know, again, in the trailer on set, you know, I spent last year in Atlanta, and there is certainly a lot of ethnic diversity, you know, in the workplace. It was great to see, because some of them I knew already, some of them I didn't. But I don't actually think it's an issue. I've so many of my friends in the business are African American. More on the straight makeup end of it.
Yeah, that's what I think. Right. I think that's the thing right there, JK. A lot of African Americans just don't focus on that area and makeup.
You're right, because when I went to Joe Blasco, I didn't. I ended up, I can do the minimal amount that they did at the Joe Blasco Nashville School that they taught us, and I taught myself more, but I did go for beauty. So you're right about that.
Yeah, I definitely. And Connor, what did you say? I couldn't hear because the lady was saying you have 2 seconds left or something. But what was the name of the artist that you were just speaking of, the African-American artist you were speaking of?
The designer, George Duchel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I couldn't hear when you said that. Yes, I really think that's the key right there. It's just, like you said, there's diversity in the workplace, but I just don't think that there are a lot of African-American special effects artists out there. There may be some, but I just don't think there's a lot.
No, there isn't, but of course that's up to the individual, you know. It is very true, but I've worked with, you know, my share of, well, I mean, really, it's, you know, especially in Los Angeles, it's really a melting pot. So, you know, there's plenty of ethnic diversity in makeup effects.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and I'm in Tennessee, so there's a different level of that. It's not diverse. But then we do know I'm the only African American in my union, so here in this state. So it's not as diverse. I'd love to see you do some classes, even if only at the IMAT show, where we can attend to, you know, kind of people can broaden their range of what they can do, at least some minimal teaching numbers.
I have been asked to do demos at IMAT LA.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, we can't wait to see that, because we're like IMAT LA regulars, so
it'll be my first.
That.
I've never attended.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Connor, you should be ashamed.
I'm sorry.
You should be ashamed. That's it, Connor. I haven't either. And I've been doing makeup for 8 weeks.
I think you both will enjoy it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Connor, I have one last question for you, and this may be a question, you know, you may be thrown off a little bit. You don't have to have a special answer or anything like that. We normally ask all of our guests this question. And we just simply want to know, what is beauty to you?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
What is beauty to you?
What is beauty to me?
Uh-huh.
I would have to say the easy answer is beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Hey.
Because I'm a prosthetic specialist, I can make something that is gory and demonic and so on, but I see beauty in it if it's a beautiful piece, if it's nicely rendered.
Mhm. Very nice. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you again so much, Connor. I really do appreciate it. Appreciate you joining us. We can't wait to see you at IMAT. Yeah,
yes,
really appreciate it. And looking forward to seeing you at IMAT and seeing you do some demos, and looking forward to seeing some of your work on some big, great films.
Me too.
Oscar-nominated films.
I wouldn't mind that either.
So just keep working hard. I'm sure we will.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, you're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, JK, for your question.
Love y'all. I love y'all. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.